We have the availus for a private loss, if God forbid somebody lost a parent, child, so there's laws of availus. And then we have what you might call public availus, which is the mourning over the Chorban Beis HaMikdash, that we start with the 3 weeks and the like. And he points out that the trajectory of the availus moves in opposite directions. When you have private availus, it starts off very, very, very chamor. During Shiva, you're not allowed to leave the home, etc. And then Shloshim, you gradually go out a little bit more. And for most relatives other than parents, after Shloshim, there is no mourning. For a parent, you have up to a year, etc. So Avelis moves min ha-chomor el ha-kal, from that which is very, very severe to that which is progressive. But you kind of compartmentalize it. It becomes, it's in your head, but the rest of your life goes on. And that's the Ratzon Hashem. Hashem does not want us to be perpetually broken. How many of us are so devastated that we can't go on with our lives? How many of us are so heartbroken that we can't get out of bed? How many of us can't stop crying? We don't need a mourning ritual to take us out of the sadness. We need a mourning ritual to put us into the sadness in a gradual way, in the hope that the chitzonius, the external manifestations of deprivation, should be ma'orer in our hearts, what it is that we've lost. And it's very, very difficult. The generation that experienced the Chorban Beis HaMikdash, they knew what they had. We've never seen it. How do you describe color to a person who was born blind? How do you describe music to a person who was born deaf? We've never seen the Beis HaMikdash. We've never connected to it. We don't know what Nevuah is. Sometimes we delude ourselves, maybe particularly if we live, or Zocha to live in Eretz Yisrael, Yerushalayim. Oh, the Golos is over. After the Six-Day War, there was serious discussion in some communities. You know, Orthodox people, I mean, the Gedolim were all against it, but who actually said, maybe we should not say the Tisha B'Av prayer of Nachem anymore, because Yerushalayim is no longer destroyed, it is no longer desolate, it's been built up. But that's such a misunderstanding, because the prayer is not only about the physical city of Yerushalayim. It is about all of the holiness of Gilui Shechina. So consequently, going back to Rav Soloveitchik, our problem is not we are so overwhelmed with grief that we need to come out of it. Our problem is that we are so indifferent or clueless that we need to get into it. And that is why the trajectory of Avelos is not from the Chomor to the Kal, it is from the Kal to the Chomor. Now here though, I want to start maybe with the end part process. I want to discuss, surprisingly, what the halachic status of Tisha B'Av itself is. And then we'll work backwards, 9 days, 3 weeks, and the like. The makor, the source for fasting on Tisha B'Av and some of the other fast days, is actually a pasuk in Zechariah. The Navi Zechariah, who was one of the last prophets, and he lived right at the end of the 70 years of exile, he was the Navi, when Haggai and Zechariah Malachi were the three Nevi'im at the very beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash. And when they died, that was the end of Nevuah. They are the last Nevi'im in Tanakh. And when the second Beis HaMikdash was being dedicated, Zechariah received an interesting shaila. And the shaila was, should we continue to fast in commemoration of the Chorban, Bayis Rishon, since we have now been Zocha to a second Beis HaMikdash? A good shaila, should we continue to fast? Strangely enough, Zechariah's answer is very ambiguous. If you were to simply ask yourself, he has a long answer, but if you ask yourself, how did he answer the question, it's not at all clear, but this is what he says. He says, Tzom HaRevi'i, the fast of the fourth month. Now, we always count from Nisan. So Nisan, Niyar, Sivan, Tammuz. So the fast of the fourth month is Shiva, Serpa, Tammuz. Or then it was the ninth of Tammuz, technically. Tzom HaChamishi, the fast of the fifth month, which is Av. Tzom HaShavi'i, the fast of the seventh month. Now, that's Tishrei, but that's not Yom Kippur. That's in the Torah, but he's referring to Tzom Gedalia. And Tzom HaAsiri, the fast of the tenth month, which is Teves, Asara B'Teves. These days shall become, these fast days shall become Sason and Simcha. They will become days of joy and jubilation. So the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah raises an important question, and that is, well, which is it? He gives these 4 days two different designations. He calls them fast days, and he calls them joyous days. Are they fast days, or are they joyous days? So the Gemara in Maseches Rosh Hashanah actually says there are 3 levels. There are times in which they must be observed as holidays. There are times they must be observed as sad days of fasting. And there are times in which communities can make their own decisions if it should be a fast or not a fast. What are the 3 levels? Thank you. The 3 levels are the following. I'm going to first give you a quote, and then we'll explain the quote. When there is shalom, they are holidays, rejoicing. When it is a time of shmad is persecution, then they must be fast days. When there is no shalom and no shmad, middle of the road, again, I'll define the terms, then ratzu, if the community wants to fast on those days, they may. Lo ratzu, if they don't want to fast, they don't have to. So we have these 3 categories. Shalom, shmad, ein shalom v'ein shmad. Shalom must be sasan v'simcha. Shmad must be tanit. Ein shalom v'ein shmad, ratzu, meaning the community, ratzu misanim, ratzu ein misanim. So here is how Rashi interprets it. Again, it's a very complicated sugya just in terms of defining the terms, but for our purposes, we'll go with Rashi. Rashi says, shalom means when there's a Beis HaMikdash Mamish. So when there's a Beis HaMikdash Mamish, and this includes even the Second Temple when we were under foreign domination, then these days are festive, happy days. When Jews not only lack a Beis HaMikdash, but they're being persecuted, then you're chayev to fast. Middle of the road, every community decides for themselves. Now, this is very, very fascinating, because what this actually means, I don't want to make people lenient, have halacha lenient in their eyes, that means the following. Let's take typically today. Is fasting on the 17th of Tammuz, I'll get to Tisha B'Av, an absolute obligation? So it depends. Obviously, we're not in Shalom. We don't have a Beis HaMikdash. But most Jewish communities are in the in-between stage as a community, meaning most communities don't have Shalom. They don't have active persecution. So in reality, the halachic obligation of fasting on the 17th of Tammuz is actually a minog, it is not a chiyuv. It is because Klal Yisrael accepted it, which means to say, in communities where there's active persecution, the fasting on Shiva Sorba Tammuz would be an obligation. In a community where there is not active persecution, the status of the fast is technically optional. But I don't mean optional in the sense of every individual making their decision, but optional in the sense that communities make their decisions. In the time of the Gaonim, There were many communities, again, Tisha B'Av is going to be different, you'll see in a moment. There were actually many communities which did not observe Tzom Gedalia, Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, or Asara B'Teves, because they considered their communities to be relatively tranquil. And according to the Gemara's interpretation of the verse of Zechariah, when there is relative tranquility even without a Beit HaMikdash, the rule is, Ratsu, if the community desires, Misanim, Lo Ratsu, Ein Misanim. So in the time of the Gaonim, it was actually recorded that there were Jewish communities that were living in relative tranquility, which did not observe, again, Tisha B'Av, I'm going to mention separately, did not observe the other three Tanezim. And even today, if a community is in relative tranquility, the chiyuv of keeping the fast is really a minhag that was accepted. It is not an absolute obligation. Now, again, this is going with the idea that Ratsu is a community acceptance. There are some Rishonim that even go further, and they say Ratsu is an individual decision. We don't paskin that way, which would actually mean if I live in a community of tranquility, I could just decide on my own not to fast. Again, I shouldn't have said it because we don't paskin that way. But as you know, for the other three fasts, we are very lenient for people who are weak or not feeling well. So it could very well be that the basis of the leniency is that those fasts are not a chiyuv, except when there's persecution, they are mitam minhag. Yeah. And I think that is probably the actual reason why it became a universal minhag to fast, precisely because there will always be some Jewish communities that are betzara. Now, everything I told you, this three-level stage, shalom, shmad, persecution, and ein shalom v'ein shmad, the Gemara goes on and says, only applies to the three of the four fast days commemorating the Churban, Asara B'Teves, Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, and Tzom Gedalia. With respect to Tisha B'Av, so here's what the Gemara says. There is no concept of optional. Tisha B'Av is a chiyuv even when there's no shalom and there's no shmad like today. Tisha B'Av is a chiyuv to be misabel over the Churban Beis HaMikdash. Now, let's go further. What about category one? What about when there is a Beis HaMikdash? The Gemara doesn't say. The Gemara simply says you don't have the optional category. So here, there's an amazing Perish HaMishnayis of the Rambam. The Rambam says, when the Gemara says Tisha B'Av is a chiyuv, it doesn't only mean it's a chiyuv when there's no shalom and there's no shmad. It's a chiyuv even when there's shalom. In other words, the Shita Sarambam is that the fast of the ninth of Av was observed as a fast day even during the Bayit Sheni. That is a chiddush. You don't see that from the Gemara. The Gemara does say Tisha B'Av is unique, that you don't have the optionality of Ein Shalom, the Ein Shmad, but the Rambam is Mechadesh, that the Sason V'Simcha of Tisha B'Av is only going to be with the Bayis Shlishi. The Bayis Sheni, they fasted. And therefore, according to the Rambam, although it's hard to see it from the Psukim, when they asked Zechariah, should we fast on the ninth of Av, his answer was yes. And that's why he says, these days will be Sason V'Simcha, but not now. Now, you might ask a very simple question. What would the purpose be? What would the purpose be of fasting on the ninth of Av when you have a Beis HaMikdash? The whole fast of the ninth of Av is the Churban Beis HaMikdash. You have the Beis HaMikdash. What is the reason to fast? So there are two possibilities that are given. One possibility is that the second Beis HaMikdash did not give us everything we had in the first Beis HaMikdash. Among other things, the first Beis HaMikdash, there was Nevuah. The second Beis HaMikdash, after Chagai Zechariah Malachi died, they knew they were the last prophets. There's no Nevuah. The Urim V'Tumim, which again is a form of Nevuah, when Hashem would speak via the prophetic breastplate and answer questions. We did not have that in the Bayit Sheni. Again, people sometimes misunderstand. When we say we didn't have Urim V'Tumim in the Bayit Sheni, we did have the breastplate. The Kohen Gadol wore the breastplate and the Avonim and the jewels, but there was no prophetic medium that way. In the Bayit Sheni, we were also, except for the brief period of the Hasmonean monarchy, we were under Shibud Malchios. We were ruled by first the Persians, then the Greeks, then the Romans, and the Chashmonaim were not, at least after the first generation, weren't so great either. So in many ways, Chazal consider the Chashmonaim to be equivalent to foreign occupation. Mimela, yes, Hashem gave us something wonderful, but there was so much we still didn't have that we were mitabel, says the Rambam, during the Bayis Sheni, because Hashem did not fully restore the Shekhinah as it was in the Bayis Rishon. Yeah. Oh, that's right. That's very good. Yeah, thank you for reminding me. They didn't have the Aron HaKodesh with the Luchos. That's right. That's right. That's very good. In the Bayit Sheni, if you were the Kohen Gadol and you walked into the Aron HaKodesh, there was nothing there. There was the outcropping. There was the Evan Shasia. That's all there was. There was not a single thing there. They didn't have the Aron HaKodesh. It was Melech Yoshiyahu before the Chorban hid it. Right? So Memela, that is reason number one, that the fast of the ninth of Av was observed even when there was a Bayis Sheni. Yeah. Absolutely Bayis Rishon. There is no question. There is no question. The Bayis Sheni would not be a Geula. The Bayis Rishon is Nevuah. All of these things come back. Of course, that is the case. Now, Rav Soloveitchik offers another reason why they were mourning on Tisha B'Av of the Bayis Sheni, and that is the following. Chazal understood, and the Nevi'im understood, that the Bayis Sheni was going to be destroyed. They knew it was not the final Geula. They knew this. That is why, and in fact, I'll explain something. If you look in the book of Yechezkel, in the last five prakim of Yechezkel, there's a blueprint for what the final Beis HaMikdash is supposed to look like. Now, it doesn't say it's the third. It could have been the second, right? It doesn't say the final Mikdash of Hashem looks a certain way. Now, the Bayit Sheni was not written, it was not built in accordance with that blueprint. Question is, why not? So the Rambam himself explains. They knew this was not the final one, and therefore we were not yet Zocha to incorporate that binyan. That's why the Bayit Shlishi is going to be different than both the Bayit Sheni and the Bayit Rishon. So Rav Soloveitchik says, if we assume that they knew this Beis HaMikdash is not going to last, and they also knew that Tisha B'Av is the day of Chorban, he says, every single Tisha B'Av, the Jewish people were seized with a great fear. When is the other shoe going to drop? And therefore, he says, a chiddush, the fasting on Tisha B'Av was not mourning over the Chorban Bayis Rishon, like this pshat, but it was praying that the Bayis Sheni shouldn't be Nechrev. Because they knew it was going to get destroyed, and they knew it was going to be destroyed on Tisha B'Av. They didn't know which Tisha B'Av. They didn't know how long. So every single Tisha B'Av, there was a pachat. Very, very interesting idea, which means, according to that idea, the fasting was not so much mourning as it was tshuva, to avert a Chorban. And that's why, by the way, you find, actually, that the fasting on Tisha B'Av has two different elements to it. There is the fasting of sadness and mourning and, that I deprive myself of pleasure because I'm tzibrachin. And then there is the fasting like Yom Kippur, in which we want to do tshuva to be zeicha to geula. Okay, so that's kind of a little bit of the background of Tisha B'Av itself as a halachic obligation. And technically, it is classified not as a doraisa, it's not a Torah commandment, but it's midivrei Kabbalah. Kabbalah does not mean mysticism. Kabbalah means from the prophets. It is a decree of the prophets, Zechariah, with Ruach HaKodesh, Nevuah, that the fast of Av has to be commemorated that particular way. Now, let's now go backwards into the pre-Tisha B'Av morning rituals. So what I'm going to tell you is I'm going to tell you what the Gemara says, and then you're going to see how the halacha got so much stricter than the Gemara. We have to follow the halacha, the poskim are authoritative. But the tendency of Klal Yisrael has been to be increasingly stricter with the passage of time. Psychologically, one can understand this, because the Golus gets so much bitter and bitter. Now, Baruch Hashem, maybe we have difficult times too, but we are living in relatively easier times. But if you remember the historical epics of crusades and pogroms and Holocaust, etc. And because of this, halacha tended to get stricter and stricter. Let me start with the Gemara. Insofar as the 3 weeks are concerned, there is literally no halacha about the 3 weeks. There is the fasting of the 17th of Tammuz, and that's it. The Gemara knows no restriction that starts from the 17th of Tammuz. Okay, I'm going to tell you what the Gemara says, then we'll go backwards. Now, once Rosh Chodesh Av starts, what we call the 9 days, so we simply have the Mishnah that says, Mishenichnas Av Mima'atin B'Simcha. When the month of Av begins, we reduce our joy. Right? This is the opposite of the statement, Mishenichnas Adar Marbim B'Simcha, Mishenichnas Av Mima'atin B'Simcha. Rav Schwab used to say very beautifully that you never turn off Simcha entirely. It doesn't say when Av comes in, Ein Simcha. Mematin. So in Adar, I turn it up. In Av, I turn it a little down. But Simcha, you have to have all the time. Ivdu es Hashem b'Simcha. Now, Mematin b'Simcha is a very general statement. And the only two activities that are forbidden from the 9 days in the Gemara's language are Binyan and Netiyah shel Simcha. Binyan means you don't do construction of joyous buildings like a wedding hall or whatever it is, or a porch, a gazebo. You don't do luxury construction, and you don't plant beautiful trees. That's about it. Which means, as far as the Gemara is concerned, now again, please don't misunderstand me. I'm not giving you the halacha lemaisa. I'm telling you what the Gemara says. As far as the Gemara is concerned, you're still allowed to get married. You're allowed to have haircuts. You're allowed to have laundry. You're allowed to eat meat and drink wine. So the only thing that happens with Rosh Chodesh is Mematin B'Simcha, and you don't do what's called Binyan Shel Simcha, Nitiyah Shel Simcha. Now, we then come into another category, Shavua Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av, the week in which Tisha B'Av takes place. Now this year there's going to be an interesting twist on this. If Tisha B'Av, for example, is Tuesday, the week of Tisha B'Av starts Motzei Shabbos, Sunday, Monday, right? The week. Now this year, by the way, since Tisha B'Av, although the 9th of Av is Shabbos, but we don't observe it till Motzei Shabbos and Sunday, there actually is, according to most poskim, no week of Tisha B'Av because it's the first day of the week, so this stage wouldn't apply. But according to the Gemara, Shavua Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av, that is when no haircuts, no laundry, no washing, but you could still even eat meat, even in Shavua Shechal Bo. And the isser of eating meat and drinking wine is only the suda hamafseket before the fast. Now, this is a if this picture totally confuses you and it doesn't resemble anything that you've ever seen, that's exactly right. This picture is an absolutely different picture. Now, those of you that have difficulty with the 9 days might say, oh, why can't we go back to the good old days? But let me remind you, life was much harder then in many, many, many ways and the like. So again, let me summarize just so you know what the Gemara says. 3 weeks, nothing, no prohibitions at all on the 3 weeks. 9 days until Shavua Shechalbo, the only prohibition is the generic reference of Mimatin B'Simcha, and not to have what is called netiyah, planting of beautiful ornamental plants, and binyan of simcha, like a house expansion. Fixing your toilet and the like, this is certainly permitted even on Tisha B'Av. Now, Shavua Shechalbo, the week of Tisha B'Av, which you don't have this year, that is when no laundry, no washing, no haircuts, meat and wine are permitted until the Seuda Hamafseket. Okay? So this is the structure of Avelut. I actually misspoke. Washing is connected with wine and meat. In other words, what's Aser Shavua Shechalbo is laundry and haircuts. Seuda Mafsekes is meat, wine, and washing. Right? Now, what has happened in the course of halacha is that we have grown progressively stricter, but how strict we have gone is a major, major machlokas between Ashkenazim and Sephardim. Maybe it's because Rabbi Mark Angel, who was a prominent Sephardi rabbi in New York, writes about the more joyous Sephardic temperament. He's... I don't know if that's so. Maybe he connects it to the climate and he connects it to the food. Huh?
As a
party. Okay.
And my husband grew up with Mark.
Okay. Oh, he knows Mark. Okay. But be it as it may, it is very, very true that although both Ashkenazim and Sephardim are much stricter than the laws of the Gemara, that is going to be true, but ultimately Ashkenazim became much stricter than Sephardim in this way. So let me just mention first what the Ashkenazim do, then Sephardim I'll mention as well, although with Sephardim there actually are differences within Sephardim. Ashkenazim, as you know, they already start not taking haircuts from the 3 weeks, right? From the 3 weeks, we already do not cut our hair, and we stop making weddings, right? We start from the 3 weeks, even though as far as the Gemara is concerned, the issur of getting a haircut wouldn't even start until Shavua Shechalbo Tisha B'Av. Now, once it's the 9 days, then we have the prohibition against laundry and against at least full body washing in warm water. Right, so we start that early. And the Isser of Basor and Yayin, which, according to the Gemara, would not start until Suda Hamafseket. As a result, by the time we get to Suda Hamafseket, all of the restrictions are already in place, right? In other words, the rule that you can't eat meat by the Suda Mafseket is a dead letter because you already cannot eat meat from the 9 days, unless there's a siyum or the like. So as a result, the only halacha we have left is that Suda Mafseket, you don't eat two different cooked foods. You only have bread and water, or matzah and water, etc. But basar v'yayin, you already is usher. Now, with Sephardim, the basic idea of Sephardim is that they also don't have much about the 3 weeks, although some will not make weddings for the 3 weeks, some do. They also don't have much about the 9 days. Some Sephardim will stop eating meat from the 9 days, and some will start after Rosh Chodesh. They will do it Rosh Chodesh and not afterwards, but Rav Adi Yosef at least rules that for Sephardim, the Isra of meat is Shavua Shechalbo Tisha B'Av, which this year there is not, and Hu Adin with laundry and haircuts is only Shavua Shechalbo Tisha B'Av. And this year, therefore, there is no Shavua Shechalbo Tisha B'Av. So, as I say, the only chumra that Sephardim will have for the 3 weeks is some, not all, will not make weddings during that period of time. So these are kind of the differences. And the point is, whether it's Ashkenazi or Sephardi, it is actually much, much stricter than the laws of the Gemara itself. Now, let me just mention a few things about this year, because this year, the ninth of Av itself is on Shabbos. And we know, of course, we do not fast on Shabbos except if it's Yom Kippur, which is a Torah command. That's called the Shabbos of Shabboses. So what we do is we fast Motzoi Shabbos. The fast begins Saturday night. Now, I'll tell you, again, this may be obvious to you, but I once saw this with my own eyes, and I was too shocked to stop it. I was at, when I was in Connecticut once, I was at someone's house. It happened to be Suda Shalishis, going into Tisha B'Av. And what happened was, the person knew that you have to fast Motzei Shabbos, but he said he also knew he had to make Havdalah. So what he did was, he poured a cup of wine. It's already fast. He made Havdalah, he drank the wine, and says, now we're going to start the fast. Again, that's big, big mistake, as I hope you know. So let me just go over a little bit about Havdalah and all of these other issues. First of all, because it's Shabbos, there is no Seuda HaMafseket at all. All the meals of Shabbos are regular. Meat, wine, zemiros, even Suda Shalishis, you eat sitting at a chair, not sitting on the ground. There is no egg that is dipped in ashes. The only thing is that it's some people do have a minug. They will not invite guests for Suda Shalishis, for the last meal. But even then, if you normally have people, you are allowed to have them. The only thing that you need to know that's extremely important is that you must stop eating by sunset, even though it's still Shabbos. That itself is very unusual, and that is, you can bench after Shkia, that's all right. You bench and you say Ritzei, but no eating. Once it's Shkia Tachama, once it is sunset, even though it's still Shabbos for another 40 minutes, not allowed to eat. However, you do not yet change your shoes. You still wear leather shoes because you don't do public mourning on Shabbos. Now, once it is dark, meaning it's no longer Shabbos, so either you're in shul or if you're not in shul, you say at that point, Baruch HaMavdil Bein Kodesh L'chol, and you then remove your leather shoes, either barefoot or sneakers or slippers or whatever you wear. Crocs is an interesting machlokas. Rav Yosef actually held, the meaning is not like him on this, that Crocs are so comfortable that they don't count. I mean, the problem of not wearing leather shoes is to be uncomfortable. The problem is today, all of this non-leather footwear is so comfortable, it's much more better than, all right, but nevertheless, the minhag is if it's not leather, certainly on Tisha B'Av we allow it. Yom Kippur, some would be a little stricter. Now, the only Havdalah that is recited Saturday night is the statement, Baruch HaMavdol Ben Kodesh L'chol, or if you're davening Ma'ariv, the paragraph, Atoch HaNantonu. There is no Havdalah over wine. There is no spices, Motzei Shabbos I'm talking about. There is no the Bracha HaMavdol Ben Kodesh L'chol. However, there is a Bracha recited on a candle, Borei Morei Ha'esh. And the reason is, because that's not really Havdalah. The reason why we make a bracha Borei Morei Ha'esh is not because of Havdalah, but it's because it is said that Hashem gave Adam HaRishon the gift of fire, Motzei Shabbos, and because fire is so important to life, every Motzei Shabbos we give Hashem thanks. And that's why you can only do it Motzei Shabbos. In other words, normal Havdalah you can make until Tuesday, if you had to, but Borei Morei Ha'esh is only Motzei Shabbos. Now, there is a big machlokas if women are chayavos in Borei Morei Ha'esh. So it would be preferable that you either hear it in shul or hear it from a man, a husband, or anyone If not, if you don't, then lamaisa, you do make the bracha, but it is a suffix bracha, so it is better to hear it from somebody else. Now, what's then going to happen is we have Tisha B'Av the next day, and when Tisha B'Av is over, meaning Sunday night, then we do have to make a Havdalah, because you can't eat, right? You can't eat until you make Havdalah, and then you don't have a candle anymore, but it's Borei Pri Hagafen, and I'll talk about that, Hamavdil Ben Kodesh L'Chol. Okay, so there will be Havdalah Sayyid. Now, the big problem that people have to know is, okay, what if I have to eat on Tisha B'Av? I have to eat on Sunday or even Saturday night. What happens with Havdalah under those circumstances? So here there's an important rule to know, that even if a woman or a man, for that matter, has to eat, if it is Sunday, if it is Motzei Shabbos, one cannot eat without making a Havdalah. So that would actually mean there would be Havdalah made on Sunday or even Saturday night, if necessary. Now, the question is, do you make it on wine or do you make it on beer or the like? So let me tell you a chiddush of the Brisker Rav. The Brisker Rav has a tremendous chiddush. You may have noticed last night there was some shaila, what do you make Havdalah over? The Ramah actually says if Havdalah is made over wine or grape juice, it should be given to a katan to drink, because it's the 9 days. On Shabbos I can have wine, but Havdalah is not Shabbos anymore. Others say you make Havdalah over beer. And others say you make Havdalah and you drink it. But many people are machmir that they either make it over beer or they give it to a katan. This is what the Ramah says. The Brisker Rav's chiddush is this. Listen to the Brisker Rav's chiddush. This is an amazing chiddush. The Brisker Rav says that's during the 9 days. But on Tisha B'Av, there is no particular isser to have meat or wine on Tisha B'Av. The Brisker Rav says there's an isser to eat on Tisha B'Av. But once you're eating, it doesn't have the restrictions of the 9 days. So the Brisker Rav says, even if you're not supposed to make Havdalah on wine during the 9 days, on Tisha B'Av, you can make Havdalah even on wine. And therefore, the Brisker Rav says, you can even make it on wine or grape juice if necessary. It's not clear. You can certainly be somich on the Brisker Rav. So one needs to be aware of this, that if you have to eat on Sunday, you need to make a regular Havdalah, and the Brisker Rav says you could make it on wine as well. Yeah.
Now, the people who have to eat, do they eat the shiurim?
Okay. Yeah, this is an excellent question. We know that if someone has to eat on Yom Kippur, you have to eat a small quantities and space it for up to 9 minutes. That is not a requirement, even for Tisha B'Av. Now, granted, it is true, you should not eat more than you need to feel reasonably comfortable if you're weak. So just because you're eating something doesn't mean forget about the fast. So, you know, you don't have to have double chocolate cake and steak and everything else. But you do not have to be makbid on eating bishiurim. This is an important point. Some people get mixed up with Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur. This is only a halacha for Yom Kippur. But the one thing you have to be makbid on is Havdalah. Yeah. It's a very good point. It is a very good point. If there's any leather on the shoe, it is at least a question. Some say if it's only an adornment, meaning to say it's not either the sole or the side of the shoe that's supporting your foot, it's a piece of leather over the material of the shoe. Some say it's only decorative and it would be mutter, but it's certainly better to avoid it. So one has to be very, very careful. As you know, the old-fashioned Keds sneakers. I don't even know if they make them anymore, you know, now. Running shoes and all of this stuff is so fancy that, in fact, people can even have it suitable for business meetings. You know, you can wear these types of things. So one has to be very, very careful that there is no leather on it. Yeah. Yes, that's a good point. If they are planning on fasting and finishing to the end of the fast, they should not be yotze with his havdalah. Only if they're going to eat, they would be yotze with havdalah. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, yes. Yeah. So here's the thing about bathing. Again, this is a difficult issue. Obviously, you know, in the olden days, even until fairly recently, people typically took baths or showers. You know, they did it like maybe every once a week for Shabbos or once a month. Or there are people that say they prided themselves. They have never, you know, taken a bath in 60 years. So 9 days was a deprivation, but it wasn't a very, very difficult one. You know, it was something that was not so much out of the norm. In modern society, it's a real, real hardship. Because people are used to every day or, you know, at least several times a week. So it is very true that, number one, if they're actually dirty, you can wash yourself. And also, now this is subjective, this is tricky, if you are extremely uncomfortable. Now, I know that's a little subjective, but if you are extremely uncomfortable, sweated up, etc., then you are permitted to do it. If you can do it in a lukewarm rather than very hot shower, that is the better thing to do. So do as little as you need to feel decent. In other words, the halacha acknowledges that times change. We're not Reform Jews, of course. We don't simply say halacha changes. But halacha acknowledges that as different standards change, there will be certain leniencies when is a person uncomfortable. Let me give you a simple example from the laws of mourning. If you look at the Shulchan Aruch, it says, an Ovel is not allowed to take a bath or a shower for 30 days. That is the halacha in Shulchan Aruch, that's the halacha in the Gemara, and yet it is universally the psak today. I've never heard anyone paskin the other way, that we matter taking showers after Shiva. After Shiva, simply because today that would be such an extreme hardship that Chazal never meant the hardship to apply. So to a lesser degree, not exactly the same, we have a similar type of cheshbon with respect to the 9 days. Again, one should try to respect it, but if one is really, really genuinely extremely uncomfortable, then we do have such a heter. And certainly if you're dirty, if you fell into let's say you fell into the mud and the like, certainly you're allowed, mi'ikir adin, to take a shower, yeah. No, I understand, but the poskim say, you know, there's a machlokas taka, but the poskim say that the definition of shifua shechal bo is not the week of the date of the ninth of Av, but the week of the fast of the ninth of Av. So when the fast is observed on Sunday, the week starts then. Yeah. So besamim we don't use. The minhag is not to, but you're allowed to. Again, besamim, you see, there's never an isser to use besamim. It's a bracha on pleasure, but you're not mechuyev. Now let me mention one other thing. And again, to highlight the difference between this year and other years. When Tisha B'Av is observed on the 9th of Av, and the next day is the 10th of Av, the 10th of Av has certain restrictions. And the reason is because Chazal tell us that the Beis HaMikdash was actually set on fire towards the late afternoon of the 9th of Av, and most of the burning occurred on the 10th of Av. And in fact, Rav Yochanan said, if he would have been around at the time of the Churban, he would have made the fast on the 10th of Av. Because of this, the halacha generally is, in a normal year, I'll talk about this year, in a normal year, you don't eat meat. Essentially, you keep the 9 days restrictions. You don't eat meat. You don't listen to music. You don't do laundry. You don't wash until Chatzos, the middle of the day of the next day. That's the normal situation. This year, it's a little different. And the reason why it's different is we're fasting on the 10th of Av. When the fast is over, it's already the 11th of Av. So as a result, the restrictions are a little relaxed. That is, haircuts, laundry, washing is okay right away. No waiting period at all, because it's the 11th of Av. Nevertheless, as a bit of a zecher, you don't have meat and wine or listen to music till the next morning. So either way, chatzos is not relevant here. Most of the restrictions, I think laundry is probably the biggest thing for people. You have gigantic laundry to take care of. So laundry and showering, you can do, and haircuts, if you get a haircut at night, that you can do immediately. Meat, wine, music, you wait until the morning. And this is totally different than a regular Tisha B'Av, where all of those restrictions are going to remain until chatzos of the next day. Just want to remind again, people, again, as Zmir said, Kol Misabel al Yushlayim Zoichev Raya B'Simchasa, that the more we mourn, the more we feel the loss, the more Hashem sees how much we are yearning for redemption. And when we yearn for the redemption, Hashem will bring it. The Maral says, this is the meaning of the famous Maimer Chazal, that Mashiach is born on Tisha B'Av. It does not necessarily mean the birthday of the man that is Mashiach will be on the 9th of Av. Maybe not. Chabad would have problems with that. But the idea is that what brings redemption into the world is the avelus and the sadness we have on Tisha B'Av. So may we be zocha to a fulfillment of the nevuah of Zechariah, that these days will indeed become days of sason v'simcha. We should be zocha to the binyan beis hamikdash b'mehera v'yameinu. We have the avelus for a private loss, if God forbid somebody lost a parent, a child, so there's laws of avelus. And then we have what you might call public avelus, which is the mourning over the Chorban Beis HaMikdash that we start with the 3 weeks and the like. And he points out that the trajectory of the avelus moves in opposite directions. When you have private avelus, it starts off very, very, very chamor. During Shiva, you're not allowed to leave the home, etc. And then Shloshim, you gradually go out a little bit more. And for most relatives other than parents, after Shloshim, there is no mourning. For a parent, you have up to a year, etc. So Avelus moves min ha-chomor el hakal, from that which is very, very severe to that which is...